Chapter 18. Amor Vincit Omnia. From the window they watched Napoleon ride with his troop and bodyguard down the road. Only when he was safely out of sight did Laplace turn on Sean and say in an urgent whisper,
"Sean, it's me, Pow."
"Pow," called out Sean, then quickly changed to a whisper.
"What are you doing here?"
"Same thing as you, you microbe. Looking for a way to rescue Jenny, of course, aren't you?"
"Well, yes, of course. But I don't understand. If all this time you've been Pow, how come you've been talking as if...
"As if what?"
"As if you knew stuff. That's so unlike you."
"I know all I need to know. Anyway, that wasn't me. It was Laplace talking."
"You mean he lets you be in there?"
"He doesn't know. I have worked out a way to switch to passive mode. I can take over whenever I want, like now. Sean, I hate to say this, but I need your help."
"Sure. To do what?"
"Find the source of the eggs."
"Why?"
asked Sean suspiciously. "So we can complete the VC and save Jenny and the others."
"What's the VC?"
"The Vitruvian crystal, of course, you subliminal suggestion. Leonardo and Pacioli's design of the house, based on a three-dimensional projection of the Vitruvian man."
"In the haunted house?
But how will completing this Vitruvian crystal save Jenny?" Pow tapped his temple. "I have all of Laplace's choicest memories in here. Doing the standard private gentleman's grand tour of erotic geometry hotspots around Europe as a young student, he accidentally stumbled across the secret of the rompicubidhedon.
Lucas rompicubocterhedron?
Yeah, that thing. When Napoleon returned to France from his Italian campaign in 1796, he brought with him the Cherry Lake Codex, which describes you as the watchbearer, and how the house where Leo painted the Mona Lisa contains the secret to the geometry of the divine proportion. He says the eggs need to be placed at the vertices of the rompi to complete the Vitruvian crystal. It focuses their time energy at its center, where the watch disappeared, remember? Now, more than half of the eggs are already in place because of the porphyry finishings, mantelpieces, cornices, etc., throughout the house. That's why the house is so active and dangerous. Pau pointed at the pile of disintegrated French patriots in the courtyard next door. But Leonardo and Luca never got the chance to complete it. By completing it, we will be able to control the time jump mechanism and free Jenny, Amor, Stinto, and Elf.
I see, said Sean.
How many eggs does the Vitruvian crystal need in total?
24,
the number of vertices in the rompi.
24?
Exclaimed Sean. There aren't that many oracles. We'll never find enough eggs.
I know that. That's why we need to find the source ourselves. But I don't know where it is.
Nobody does. They've been looking for it for hundreds, thousands of years.
Leonardo knew, and he left secret messages. Leo wants you to find it.
Sean nodded his head thoughtfully. One clue we have is Leo's logo.
That stupid thing. A-V-O, Amor Vincit Omnia. Love conquers all, snorted Pow. What of it?
A-V-O, in old Italian, explained Sean patiently. Avor means grandfather. And another thing, Leo always wrote in mirror writing, from right to left. Read Avo backwards and you get O-V-A, over, which means?
Egg, exasperated Sean at Pow's lack of, well, everything.
Sean took a piece of paper from Bourrienne's desk and began to write. Amor Vincit Omnia. That could be an anagram. Leo was always writing in anagrams. After several tries, Sean cried,
Eureka!
What? Asked Pow. If you rearrange the letters in Amor Vincit Omnia, you can make Ticino Minar Ovam. The grammar is a bit wobbly, but I guess it means that this part of Switzerland, Ticino, holds the mine to the eggs. He is telling us he found the time egg source somewhere near here, and my nonno has something to do with it.
Oh, yes? And what would that be?
I don't know. There must be another message. We have to look for it.
How? Pow shook his head. We can't go into the haunted house. We'd be paradoxed to bits, remember?
I've been wondering about that. When I took an egg to escape from Cesare Borgia, I deactivated the hexagogo Luca and Leo had put on the house. I guess that's how they could leave the house afterwards. But judging by the pile of French dead down there in the haunted house courtyard, in the meantime the house has been locked again. If it was not possible for anyone to re-enter the house, Leo must have left the clues outside, right? After Sean had taken Pow through this lightning logic sequence a few more times, each one slower than the previous, eventually Powell's nods began to take on more conviction. Finally, Sean could move on. "So what do we have from Leo?" "The Codex, which I helped him write. No, something else." Sean slapped his forehead. "Of course, the Mona Lisa." They moved to the painting. "Now, Powell, what did Laplace say was wrong about the painting?"
The bridge. He said it was out of place. The only thing that doesn't fit the view from here."
"And there's absolutely no artistic reason why it should be there," concluded Sean, peering closely at the multi-arched stone structure behind Mona Lisa's left shoulder.
"But there are thousands of bridges in Europe. It could be any of them."
"Somewhere Leonardo has been, though." Sean suddenly stopped as a new thought struck him. "Tell me, Powell, if you can allow Laplace to take over, how do you know that he's not, well..."
"Well, what?"
"You know, listening in."
Powell suddenly felt uncomfortable.
Because it doesn't work like that."
"Listen, I have an idea," said Sean. "How can we get out of here without Napoleon knowing?"
"And what if he does know?"
"I don't trust him. He's up to something. What does he really want the eggs for?"
Powell scoffed. "As he says, to see the future. Imagine what you could do with that ability and the stock market."
"Is that the only thing you can think of? Money?"
"And you don't, I suppose," scoffed Powell with a smirk as broad as Mona Lisa's. Sean thought he had seen that irritating, self-approving smile before on someone else.
"Napoleon said he was only popping out to conquer a country or two. He could be back any minute."
"Yeah, but we can't just walk out. We'd have half the French army following us."
Sean went to the window and peeped out cautiously.
"Actually, I think you'll find Napoleon took them all with him. Let's go."
The journey around the lakeshore and up the mountain behind Mona Lisa's left ear was remarkably uneventful, except for Powell's whining questioning.
"Why here?"
"Didn't you notice? If you look closely at the mountain behind Jenny, on the right of the painting, you can see that there are three mountain peaks. Why three, when you can only see one in reality?"
"So has Leo's artistic license expired or something?"
"Look, in Italian, three mountains is tre montagne. But another word for montagna is monte. I remember there is a village halfway up this mountain called Tremonta. My grandfather told me of a legend that has it there was an ancient village somewhere near Tremonta that disappeared suddenly without a trace, and nobody serious has ever known why."
The postcoach which had brought them up the mountain dropped them at the Tremonta village square, which was deserted. Three of the cardinal horizons were clogged with stunning panoramas of the Alps, while the southern one, in stark contrast, disappeared into the seemingly never-ending plain of Lombardy's alluvial tribulations. After an hour of fruitless searching for clues, they found themselves sitting on the small church steps. Sean suddenly grabbed Powell by the elbow.
"Powell, that statue."
"The angel? What of it?"
"It is turned to a rather strange angle, don't you think? As if its wings were pointing up that hill. And another thing, I've only just noticed, but this church is dedicated to St. Paul."
"Why is that strange? Many churches are dedicated to Peter, Paul, or Mary. What do you want, Saints Tom, Dick, and Harry?"
"It's just that this mountain we are on is called Monte San Giorgio, St. George. Why would the only medieval church in a village be dedicated to St. Paul when their local patron saint is George?"
"Isn't this what they call quibbling?"
Sean clapped his hands, the noise of which echoed around the rocky slopes above them.
"Eureka, I have it!"
"Really? Is it catching?"
"Look, everything in the painting matches reality perfectly, except for two things. Both on the right-hand side of the painting. Why?"
"Leo was short-sighted in his right eye?"
"More likely, don't you think, they are meant to be used together as a subtle clue for where to look. How do you get St. Paul and angel's wings out of that?"
Leonardo loved to play with words, especially between different languages. "The bridge is behind Jenny's shoulder, right? In French, shoulder is épaule. The bridge is clearly pointing to the shoulder, à l'épaule, or à l'épaule, and ale is Italian for wings."
"I see," nodded Powell, who obviously didn't.
"And here we are,
at the Wings of St. Paul on the Tremonta Mountain, as instructed. So, if you're correct, what next? The wings are pointing up the hill there to that group of rocks. Let's go. And Sean led the skeptical Pow up through the brushland to the rocky mass. Do you think this is where the lost village might have been? Wondered Sean aloud, as they stood in a small, flattish area, long left to its own devices, hidden among rocky precipices and outcrops all around them. Who cares? We're after the egg source, not on a school history outing. What? You think a vanishing village has nothing to do with the source of time eggs? Do you mean it might be dangerous? Asked Powell, looking about him fearfully. We have to take that risk. Jenny is counting on us, remember? We have to look for some sort of clue as to where the source might be. It is surely underground. It took them a good hour to find it. It was a gap between two rocks, that on clearing away the copious growth around it, proved to be a narrow opening to a rapidly widening chasm within the rock massive they were on. Wow, was Power's comment. That was well hidden. The best kept secret in the world. He peered over the edge of the hole. That's quite a fall, said Sean. There'd be no way back if he fell in there. Yes, said Powell, in a strangely contemplative sort of voice. Sean put his head over the edge and listened for his echo as he called into the chamber. That's funny. No echo, he said after a while. He leant inside as far as he dared, then whistled. I can see eggs, hundreds of them, all around the walls. This is definitely the source. He pulled himself back out and sat up. So this is where the Oracles and the Bernoulli brothers, for that matter, got their stones. We'll need to go back to the village and find some rope. But when he tried to stand, Powell pushed him back down roughly. Careful, Powell, I might have fallen in. That's the idea. Powell's face was now different, hard, angry, and distinctly sly. What are you doing? Cried Sean. I'm going to throw you in. But why? Because it ends now. I don't know how, I don't know why, but you are the factor that is upsetting everything. If it weren't for you, I'd still be with Jenny. You and that vermin advertising watch are the cause of all the changes in the timeline. His voice whined up half an octave as he railed against the injustice of it all. I just want everything to return to as it was before. This chasm is where the time lava comes out. It's connected to the Spen mat, the cosmic background of space, energy, and matter, where time does not exist, cried Sean, his eyes wide with customized terror. However all that works, it seems to me if I send you into it, just maybe it'll rebalance everything. You don't know that. You never know anything. Suddenly Powell laughed. Well, Mr. Know-it-all, there are some things you don't know. For example, how do you think Cesare Borgia found you in 1500, so quickly after you arrived? How do you mean? No, you didn't. Sean's eyes widened in horror. Oh, yes, I did. I knew already then you were Cespuglio's target, not us. Not the true Time Riders. All I had to do was give you to Cespuglio and he would leave us alone. When you were enjoying yourself helping Leo paint Jenny as the Mona Lisa, I went to Lugano Center to see if Amour had arrived. Don't be so naive. She would have come straight to us. I went into Lugano to send a message to Cespuglio, who was in Milan as Cesare Borgia. Jenny and I had eggs. He would take only you. It was a great pity you escaped, but you won't get away this time. But Powell, Cespuglio is dead. He was executed in London in 1699. We both saw it. We're safe. The invertebrates are still here. That means the timeline is still being disrupted. That proves it's you. Your presence out of time is still destroying our timeline. You have to be sacrificed to the volcano god. Sent to a place where you can no longer damage time. In fact, where time does not even exist. It is my duty. To humanity. And the whole world. Pow! No, you don't know what will happen. Maybe you'll find the lost village you're so fond of. Or maybe you'll just cease to exist. Out of time, out of mind, so to speak. You're going in, Sean. Pow was occupying a much bigger and stronger person than Sean's drummer boy, and despite Sean's concerted efforts, could not help but lose ground in the push of war they were engaged in.
"Pau, you're making a big mistake. Listen to Laplace, he knows."
The black hole beckoned, and Jean felt his feet exchange the resistance of the rocky ground for thin air. And that would normally have been the it we all dread, except an extraordinarily convenient thing happened. Before the gravity of the situation, so to speak, had asserted itself, Sean's fall was broken by a projecting wooden pole. This particular wooden pole, when Sean clambered up onto it, proved to be projecting from a harness of sorts, and this in turn was attached to a much larger overhanging something else above that. What this ensemble composed was suddenly and dramatically demonstrated when, under the influence of Sean's unbalancing added weight, it shifted and, with Sean clinging to the harness for dear life, seemed to slide down some sort of rail system and take off into the void of the chasm. Panic cannot hold a candle to what Sean was experiencing. But then again, on the aesthetic side, there was just enough light for Sean, when he finally managed to open his eyes, to see that all around him was a spectacle of rare and wondrous beauty. He was flying inside an enormous cavern decked and walled by millions of insidiously radiant stone eggs. It seemed as if the entire inside of the mountain were hollow, but the glowing egg walls faded away and down into a dark nothing that made other bottomless pits look like paddling pools. He therefore took time off from marveling at the scenery to construct an explanation for the flying part of the miraculous turn of events. This investigation resulted in the knowledge that he was on a hang glider, the first ever built, and from its wooden frame and yellowing-white cotton wing, Sean immediately recognized its origin, having seen illustrations of it in 100 books.
"Oh, Leo, thank you, Leo," he called out in surprise and wonder.
But how had Leonardo known he would need this? And while we are listing questions, now what? The glider was circling on its own, and his presence must have also been agitating the eggs, for they were beginning to glow with much greater self-awareness than before. Sean could feel the air buzzing with their collective scintillation. When the glider reached the center of the cavern, it lurched sickeningly, as a powerful thermal updraft caught it, and shot it like a champagne cork up and out of the hole he had entered just minutes before so unceremoniously. He barely saw Pau's startled face as he shot past, high, high up. But before the thermal had even begun to show signs of having run its course, he heard a familiar, accented voice cry out below, "Fire!" The air whizzed variously, and several things on the glider went to the wooden and canvas equivalent of ping. His new trajectory was rapidly earthwards, and the freely flapping canvas of the wing above him ensured his spiral pattern was now extremely tight. He looked down, and he saw he was heading for the appropriately termed dead center of a ring of dismounted cuirassiers. These invertebrates had quickly reloaded their muskets and were readying them again. The unmistakable profile of another figure, with its oversized bicorn hat and spinning pennant, left Sean in no doubt as to who was in charge. Sean closed his eyes and waited for Napoleon to order the next fire, but it did not come. Sean's corkscrew spiral was now at the level of the treetops. He thought of his mother, Nonno, and of Jenny, and how he had let them down. He suddenly also thought of Leo. This was because, as he spiraled the last meters towards the ground, he noticed a cloth pouch bouncing jauntily as it hung from the front bar, an arm's length in front of him. By the way it swung, he knew it contained time egg.
"Clever, clever, Leo," thought Sean, realizing that his old friend's help across the centuries had not yet ended.
Somehow Leonardo had foreseen this whole event, and had fitted a time egg to the craft to break when he hit the ground, providing him with the means to escape. All Sean had to do was let the egg fall out of the pouch when the glider crumpled on impact, to break on the ground, and he would travel through time, away from the invertebrates, away from Napoleon, Pau, and the haunted house. He would be safe. The kite duly hit the ground. Although Sean was badly winded, he managed to put his hand out and catch the egg before it could hit the ground. He heard an invertebrate approach, and everything went the comfortable mauvey grunge black Sean was getting used to at the end of chapters.